Good morning. Good morning, everyone. I haven't said anything in a while, so my voice was gone. We are going to do the Q&A today. Happy 4th of July. We are going to, I'm going to kick it off with talking a little bit about my plan for the day and what we're doing. We're starting Boot Camp Basics. Basically, it's the boot camp for all the basics. We're going to be doing that this month. So starting next week, we're going to double down and get busy with the first big basic, which is the realistic doable plan. We're kind of changing the name over to a doable plan because we love the word do. And it means like not only am I going to make it doable, but I'm going to do it. So that was a brainchild of Coach Betsy. And I was like, I really like that. So we're going to be, you'll start hearing us call the realistic plan the doable plan now. And both names are the same. It just really means what I love about phrasing it as doable is that it implies like I'm not only going to make something that's doable for me, but I actually plan to do it. So next week, that's what we're focusing on. All things planning. So you're going to see us doing our quick hits, which if you don't know what a quick hit is a short video. It's like a clip from me to you on specific things. So they're very fast. They're going to be in your private member podcast. You will see them in the Facebook group. So if you see it in the Facebook group and you want to discuss it, please feel free to discuss it. It will be coming from the coach's account so that all of the coach's Facebook account, they'll all get pinged. So they'll know when you guys are talking there if you have any questions or anything like that. And then next week, our calls will be reinforcing all of the doable plan stuff. So very exciting. We love doing a boot camp month every few months where we do something where we just focus on the core things it takes to lose weight. So today, if you guys don't know, this is my birthday month. So for all of you, I like to celebrate my birthday for an entire month. Next weekend is my actual birthday, but my entire family's coming over today. So my brother and his wife, and I think his daughter's coming too with her boyfriend. They're a maybe, you know, they're like 18 and a maybe. But some of my brother's friends and then me and Chris and everything, we're going to be together this afternoon. We're going to play cornhole. We're going to have some drinks and we're ordering Mexican and all the things. So we are celebrating my birthday. And my plan today was I got up this morning and I have had a back problem now for about a week. I have been really suffering with my lower back hurting. I lifted weights one day and what I think happened is I'm a little tight. And I wasn't particularly careful when I was lifting. And I've got this spot right here that's just not giving in. And so I've only walked the rest of the week. And so this morning I got up and it was pretty stiff. But when I go for my walks, it feels so much better. But that's about all the movement that I can get in right now. So I got up this morning and I went for my, I think I did 4 miles this morning. And just walked slow. I listened to some podcasts on some, like one on how to weigh in. It's a private podcast, so I couldn't give it to you guys, but it was a really good coaching call on the relationship with the scale. I listened to another one on expectations of how the people, like your family, should get along so that you don't feel stress and stuff. So I just did some self-development this morning. I listened to some of my anti-racism book stuff, still digging and getting into all that stuff. That was super interesting. There was a concept they were talking about, white apathy. And I was like, one of the things I love about studying things that are outside of weight loss, like when it's about a completely different topic, it very often makes my brain fire because my primary focus is usually figuring out, you know, coaching and weight loss and stuff and how does it apply to our journey. And that whole chapter, my brain was just sitting there thinking about like the concept of apathetic. And I think a lot of us do this in all kinds of realms in life. But look at all the places where you feel like, because you're like, we do this a lot, I think, when we're losing weight, especially. Say you've lost a bunch of weight and then you get to this point where you start telling yourself, but I'm so much better than I used to be. And like you're just kind of going through the motions, because the motions are, they still feel new, but your energy towards losing weight is a little apathetic. Like, you're not really testing your hunger scale anymore. You're not really trying new things. You're resisting, and you're just kind of apathetic. Like, yeah, but it's so much better than it used to be. I loved the term, because like the way that they were describing it with white apathy is like, a lot of us don't see systemic racism. And so we just kind of sit back and be like, well, I'm not a problem. Like, you know, I like women of color, you know, like that kind of like, yeah, but is that helpful towards changing things? You know, and it's like the same thing goes in weight loss. It's like, yeah, you might be better than you used to be. And yeah, you might be doing the things, but are you doing them energetically? Like, are you doing it with like, are you willing to question everything? Are you just sitting back, kind of observing it and not really actively doing new things? And I think that that's very tricky for a lot of us in weight loss, is what we do is we're doing things, but we're not really doing them in a more energetic way. And so it was just super interesting. So I listened to that. And then when I was taking my shower, I was listening to another book that I'm real into right now. It's called, I think it's called Fuck Your Diet, but it's hilarious. It is just a hilarious, like, basically, it's about this chick who grew up poor. She's a woman of color. She was overweight, really tall, and just the bullshit that she went through. And she just kind of reminds me of me. She just has the funniest shit to say. And it's just about like, it's basically like her telling of what it was like for her. So anyway, I listened to a ton of stuff this morning. And that was part of my gift to me for my birthday. And then I had my breakfast. So I had my eggs, one piece of sausage, and I didn't even eat all of it, but I was like, obviously thirsty from walking because I sweat a lot because it's really hot outside. I ate my watermelon. And then I plan to have just fruit for lunch today because I'm going to be outside most of the day, and I know it's going to be hot, and I know it's going to be all the things. And when I'm in the pool, like, I can't take like much food. Otherwise, like, y'all know how I am about y'all walking around with just the phone and movement. Well, when I'm in the pool and floating, if I have ate too much, then I have to get out because I'm just like nauseated. So as I've gotten older, this has gotten worse. So I'm going to hang out by myself by the pool today. I'm reading a book by Glennon Doyle. It's her new one. What is it? Untamed. I'm really enjoying it. I've never read one of her books before. I've heard people talk about them all the time. But I think it's really good. So I'm reading that this afternoon, and then my brother and all them are coming over, and then we're going to have some drinks, and then we're going to play the cornhole. We're going to eat the Mexican, and I'll probably have fajitas. I normally like to do shrimp fajitas or steak fajitas. I think I'm going to do shrimp today. It'll be good. So that's kind of the plan. And if I can be in bed by 8 o'clock, even better. So there you have it. That's my 4th of July / birthday party. All right. If you guys have any questions, go ahead and type them in and use hashtag ask, and we will get going on that. Are we going to have a planner class for the new planners? I don't think you guys actually need a class. We've covered some of the stuff, but we wrote this class to specifically be very self-explanatory. If you guys want a planner class, I can take you through it, but use the planner first, and let's just see if you have any questions. What our goal with the planner was to make it to where anybody could do it, and there was really nothing in there that was complicated to where you couldn't just answer questions. Look, okay, like, I know the answer to this. I know the answer to this. If you will make sure, really the only things that's in there that would need explaining is technically just the hunger scale, and that's module 1 of No BS, where we talk about the hunger scale and your +2 and your -2. But everything else is inside of No BS. So I'm sorry, guys. It's almost time to get my lash fill, and so at the very end, they're all coming out. So it just annoys the shit out of me. But if you guys really need a planner class, we can do one. One of the things that we are doing when we do the virtual camp is we are using the planner as a workbook. So while everybody's at virtual camp, they will be filling those things out. We are recording all of camp. So my goal is that since we're going to have a really good recording and explanations, we will probably take some of those segments in the Q&As and then just make a, like a little, it's not really a planner course, but like if you want to dive deeper into the planner, you know, here are some discussions, here's some things around it. So that's kind of like our long-term goal, just so you know. I did not bring my glasses in here. Shit. Hey, Chris. Can you get my glasses, babe? They're, I think I left a pair in the other room or maybe in this bathroom, but I can't hardly see. Thank you. Oh my God, this is like the dirtiest ones too. Jesus, I have so much makeup all over all my glasses. How do you evaluate your weekly, monthly plans? I feel like my assessment is really based off my habit tracker and I have difficulties in seeing patterns in my data. I just take a look at it and just say like, all right, if I was going to look for patterns, what would I find? You really, the assessments are about asking you questions and like saying like either asking you questions of like either what you're noticing or what you did right this month. I want you to think about the weekly and monthly assessments. Part of their job is to help you reinforce things that are, that you're doing right. That's like a big piece because what I notice a lot of you are, I mean, and I want you to think about this is very human, but the majority of us, what we're going to do is say like, I'm not good enough. Or because I haven't hit my goal yet, I must not be good enough. Our brain likes to default to what's wrong. And that is just how the brain is like designed. It was very useful back in the day when we lived in a cave. Not so useful when we have houses, air conditioners, and refrigerators. So what I want you guys to think about when it's coming to the habit tracker is like, here's the easy way to see patterns. Here is like you're on or you're off. And now what you want to do is you want to dig into those daily plans to figure out, all right, why was I off? What was going on? What excuses am I using? All that kind of stuff. Weekly and monthly, I will say if it was me, I would look at those as like, this is such a good way for me to force myself to find what's working, to make some like just bigger picture look backs at what's happening. Since you spoke about apathy and weight loss, how do you combat that? First, you just notice where you're doing it. Notice the thought that's causing it. Apathy is a feeling. Look at the thought causing it and then ask yourself, is that thought useful? If it's not useful, what do I need to be thinking to generate a new emotion? A lot of you, what you want to do to combat apathy is, well, let me just do more without changing how I'm thinking. So now what I want to do is I just want to make myself do more shit while I feel apathetic, while I think apathetically. Guys, that doesn't help. If all it took in weight loss was just making yourself do shit, I would just tell you guys, here's the four basics. Now get out there and do it. I don't give a shit what you think. I don't give a shit what you believe. I don't give a shit how you feel. Just do it. Just do it. Like, but that doesn't work. It's just like with our children. If you want them to do things, most of the time, we can't just, like if all you ever tell your kids is just do it, and you never give them like, well, here's a reason why. Here's why it's important. I mean, I want you guys to think about this. When you, like, let's say you're at work and they're going to have you do a project. Do you want them to just say like, hey, here's your project, just do it? Or do you want them to give you like, well, why are we doing it? And how does this impact things? And can you give me some deadlines? Can you tell me how this is really going to help? You know, like blah, blah, blah. Like the more you know about something and you understand its importance, and you understand the benefits and stuff, like spend more time thinking about that versus just like, well, I got to get this done. I'm supposed to fill out my planner every day. But why? Why are you filling out your planner? Why is it even important to you? Why are you still trying to lose some weight? Why is it important? Like spending some time and understanding that stuff, you start tapping into purpose, deeper motivation, understanding, and that kind of stuff. That gets you out of apathy. But if you're just checking boxes and not seeing any results, then you have to ask yourself, like, why am I not examining things? What would be keeping me from that? What thought is it that's keeping me from doing those things? Working on differentiating between urge versus hunger. Is it safe to assume if an urge is coming a couple of hours after dinner, it is probably just an urge and not real hunger? Yeah, pretty safe to say. Most of us are going to eat enough at dinner to where we're not going to waste away and die if we don't eat in 2 hours. I'm working on stopping that restrictive dieting that's led to binging in the past. Well, so I want you to think about this. In 2 hours past, you probably are having urges. Here's what I would do. I would just always assume that if I've ate, like if I'm feeling like I want to eat in 2 hours, the first question I want to ask myself is I want to look back and say, self, that last meal, I intellectually believe that that was plenty of food. If I intellectually believe my body got plenty of food, then I can at least understand that right now my body is asking for more food, not from a physical standpoint, but what else could it be? So do that for a few weeks. Like, understand why your body's wanting to ask for more food rather than being like, all right, I'm going to be in confusion. I don't know if it's an urge. I don't know if I'm actually hungry. I'm just going to do all these things. Like, I like for you guys to just like, let's just be intellectual about it. Let's just use that conscious brain. If I showed someone my food, let's say your kid came to you and said, here's what I ate. 2 hours later, I'm like, I think I need something else. And here's what I think I need. And that's always another good question when it comes to an urge. What is it that you're wanting to eat? Sometimes you will really know if it's an urge by the quality of which you want. So Kathy and I actually podcast yesterday. You guys are going to get this podcast. I believe it's next Friday in the public podcast, where we both talk about urges that we had to work through, and Kathy worked through her successfully and Corinne did not. Corinne had her chips, but we talked about it in a way where we went through it. We talked about it, our process, what our brains were saying, how we set ourselves up. I think you guys will find it fascinating. And one of the things I want to invite all of you to do is that when you hear the public podcast, you know, we don't discuss the public podcast with the public. You know what they get? One fucking shot. Like, even in my social media, when we post things, I don't engage much. I mean, I'll say like, way to go or something like that. But you guys are my priority. So if you ever want to discuss the podcast, post it in the Facebook group. It's like, hey, I was listening to your podcast and you said these things and would love to know more about it, or how can we apply it or whatever. Feel free to always take that discussion way deeper and further in here. So anyway, we talk about it over there. But so like sometimes the quality of food. So like for me, here's how, like I knew I was hungry, but I also was having a craving at the same time, and I set myself up for it. I was already thinking about chips before I even started eating my dinner, and there were like these decision points. So look for that podcast next week. I think that taking that podcast and then asking some questions after this will really help you. But when it comes to when you say, I'm working on stopping that restrictive dieting, hang on a second, people are texting me, is the only thing that led to the binging was some thoughts of I can't have, usually. Most of the time what ends up happening is I can't have this, or I can't handle this, or something along those lines is a thought that creates an urge, and then the binge is the reaction to it. For you, what I would really work on, Joanne, is noticing that when you're not going to eat first, how are you talking to yourself? Are you talking to yourself in a way of, I'm choosing not to eat, here are the reasons why, and each reason why feels like a gift, self-love, compassion, understanding, like is all of that in that realm? Or when I'm not eating something or saying no or examining things, am I doing it from a place that feels hard? Like a lot of I can'ts, I shouldn'ts, I don't think I should do this, I don't know. That's going to create a storm of feelings like confusion, overwhelm, restriction, deprivation. Like, notice how your language is, because those feelings are probably very attached to the reaction of binging. For a lot of you, those feelings have a strong attachment to an overeat. And so the more you understand, this is my thinking that keys up these types of feelings, and my body, its habitual response to these feelings is to start thinking about food, to start coming up with reasons and justifications around why I need to eat. And so the more you get aware of that language, then you get the opportunity to start changing the context in how you talk to yourself and changing the context in what you say, so that now that I know this is my language that fucks me over, when that language comes in, I don't allow it to go on repeat. I'm like, okay, that's the language that I'm working on changing. This is how I'm actually going to be thinking about food. I've processed it by myself with some paper at like 8 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday. And I've wrote about, you know, like when I binge, these are words I typically use and phrases I typically use going forward. But here's what I really want to think. In the moments when I'm telling myself no, it's easy to think it's too hard. It's easy to think it's unfair. It's easy to think this is restrictive behaviors. That's my easy thoughts that I've learned over time that hose me. And it's okay if they come in, but when I am going to tell myself no to some food, it's because I'm actually working on how to handle urges. I'm actually working on how to develop a relationship with food where when I eat, it truly does feel like enough. And when I say no, it doesn't mean I'm not getting enough. It means I know that I don't need more. So like that is where you do all of that work. Stacy, the urge meditation is underneath. If you go to pnptribe.com, go to the, I think it's called bonus worksheets and stuff like that. There's bonuses in there. Just scroll down and you'll see the urge meditation. It's about 10 minutes. Resources. It's called the resources area. I'm losing weight with my doable plan. I know that leveled up will break a plateau. Should I wait until then or start now? I'd wait till a plateau. I would always wait till a plateau before I level up. Unless, now here's the difference. If you want to start like subbing some foods out, let's say that you're losing weight just fine. And every night you're having, let's say a cookie every night. Let's pretend every night after dinner, like, and I always plan a cookie and I eat my cookie. And you've been kind of thinking like, I don't even know if I want the cookie anymore. Maybe I'll just have some fruit. Or maybe I just won't sometimes. That's fine. You can do that now. What I don't want you to do is I don't want you to feel like there's a right or wrong. It's more about, I want you thinking about your food in such a way that you're like, I am so in control. Like, look at me. I'm making plans. I'm following plans. This feels very doable. I really love these things. I'm thinking about my future self and I see her eating healthy and stuff. I'd like to just try this. I want the mindset to be like, I'm excited to try this. I'm curious to try this. This sounds like a good idea. This might sound fun. This, you know, I just want to see what it's going to be like. Like, that's the mindset of which I want you changing your food. And that's the mindset I'm trying to teach all of you, that through your weight loss, I want everything to feel more like, yeah, like I'm excited. Like I can picture a different version of me. Like, and you don't even have to picture the end version. I want you to picture like, you know, somebody in 3 months from now or 2 months from now, everything just feels a little easier. Like I could see myself planning and it being easier. I see myself eating a little healthier and I actually like it. Like I want you guys thinking about like the more you think about that version of you, the easier today it is to figure out what to do to get there. And the more you think about your future, you start making better decisions today. And you actually start looking forward to some of those decisions. I want you guys enjoying your weight loss. I'm just going to say, I've been really doing a lot of writing and reflecting upon my own weight loss. And I'm like, I know the reason why it worked is because it was actually fun this time. Now, I'm not saying it was all fun. There were plenty of times when I decided, like, I was going to go to IHOP. And I was like, oh, fuck, we're not having the pancakes this time. Like, I have decided I want to try on this toast instead of pancakes, you know, hat for a little bit. And I remember being uncomfortable, but curious at the same time. And it was only uncomfortable because I kept thinking, well, we're not going to have pancakes. And I bet they're going to smell good and look good, but we're going to be doing our toast this time. And like, I just remember it being not like what most of us go through, which is I can't have pancakes. Everybody else is going to have some. And, you know, this is what it takes to lose my weight. And I really hope it pays off on the scale. And just like, I didn't do a lot of drama because I was so focused on who I wanted to be in weight loss, not just trying to figure out how to escape the person I was. I'm confused about the journal prompts. Do we just pick one for the day, or do we choose a set for the month to work on? Either way you want to do it. There's literally no right or wrong. Seriously, I want everybody to just drop the idea that you are going to do the planner wrong or that there is a set of instructions. Here it is. Open it up every day. Make a fucking plan. Answer the questions. When you get to the journaling part, what do you want to answer for the day? That's it. Like today, did you notice you woke up and thought my thighs are a piece of shit? If so, pick a body image prompt. If tomorrow you wake up and you're like, fuck that scale. Then you want to do a scale prompt. Like, I want you guys thinking about, like, what do you need now? Now, for some of you, you're like always like, fuck that scale. That thing's a son of a bitch. And he just ruins my life. And rah, rah, rah. And like, you know, that thing controls me. If that's your thing and it's like sucking the energy out of you, then I would probably spend a month on the scale. But here's what I want you to remember. The best thing you'll ever do for yourself is to just do something. Expect there to be no right or wrong. The more you just do things, the more you will find your life going in the direction you want it. The journal prompts are all in the planner. So we gave you tons of journal prompts in the back of the planner. So if you turn to the, I don't have mine. Mine is always downstairs. I don't know. I need to just print one and keep it in the damn office. If you turn to the back part where the journal pages are, we gave you journal prompts for all kinds of different things. So there's like 30-day prompts. There are some where we just have like 5 different questions around if you're trying to dial in the hunger scale or something like that. You can do that too. Yes, it's the new planner, Anna. If you don't have the new planner and you're still using up the old one, here's a pro tip. Go to the website. Pull up the PDF version of the planner. Open your planner up. And then just write questions each and every day. Open your planner and just pick a day. Just start writing. It can also be that simple. When I have physical annoying but not bad pain, I tend to give in and eat off plan or eat. What kinds of things can I tell myself instead of fuck it? So what I would do is I would start with when you know that, like, all right, I tend to fuck it eat when I have physical pain. So that first of all, like any physical pain is an indicator in your body to pay attention to your thoughts. That would be step one. Like that's the first thought. So instead of just being fuck it, it would be like every time I feel physical pain, indicator light that my brain might want to do some fuck it eating. The next thought is I would literally tell myself, sometimes I think eating is the solution to pain. It's not. It's something I do sometimes, but it's not the solution. Otherwise, my pain would quit coming. So I would just remind myself, like, sometimes I want to eat when I have physical pain. I'm just wrong about that. That would be my first thought. How will camp be different now since there will be no live audience? So what we are doing, we were already doing this for camp no matter what, so it didn't matter if it was in person or not, is there will be, I just shot 12 videos yesterday. So we will have these 5 to 15 minute segments. So there'll be a video of me teaching a concept. And then we're going to come on live, and here I am, and I'm going to either walk you guys through a worksheet or we're going to break you out into a worksheet. We're still working on the technology on that side. And then we're going to come back and I'm going to coach and answer questions for an hour and a half like I normally do at camp. So the only difference really will be is that rather than somebody running around with a mic and us going, please put it up to your mouth, please put it up to your mouth, you know, act like you know what to do with it. It will be, we'll bring you on screen. There will be a big screen where I can see you, and everybody will be able to see you and me who are out in the virtual audience. So it's going to feel a lot the same. There just won't be a lot of, like, you won't hear everybody laughing and giggling like we normally do. I think the biggest difference is just going to be just the surrounding noise of people. So a lot of you are just going to, you know, you'll be watching, but I will tell you this. I have been to several online events. I have took all the notes. I know how to do an online event. I've already done one myself. I have been working with you guys forever. If you like this, I will be just as energetic, if not more. We're still going to have a stage. We're still going to have lighting and all that kind of stuff. So it's going to feel really good. But you guys are now going to get to ask a lot of questions. And I think one of the things that will actually be fun for the virtual experience is, you know, basically when we're all together, unless I call on you, you just don't even get a chance to ask questions and stuff, right? The coaches are going to have, you are all going to be in these different, I think if our technology works the way we want, you're actually going to be in these different rooms. And then you'll be talking to the people who are all in your room, and every room has a coach. So there will be a lot of ability to do some in time interaction and questions. So what I think is going to happen for that virtual experience is you guys will get it, like, it's like you might not have champions and you might not have the in-person part, but there are other things that are really going to be great, and there are other things that are going to be really good. So I think it ends up coming out in the wash, but it's going to be great. Like, the content is really good. And so for all of you who are not coming, in case you did not register and stuff, I don't want you to feel like, because we have closed it down. We are going to be recording all of camp. We're going to take snippets of, like, what if I teach something that I think is, like, fucking valuable, we're going to find a home for it. Our campers are going to get the entire package so that they can watch it as many times as they want. They can go back and take notes and do all the things. But we will be pulling a few clips out of it that are super impactful. The other thing that we are doing too is we are taking the lessons that I'm teaching at this camp in particular. They are the dry run of what our new No BS content is going to be that we're going to be releasing in September, in the middle of September. And so I'm going to use, like, here's how I think it should be taught. And then the questions and everything that we get and the processing and the coaching will allow me to go back and finalize all of it. So I just think it's, like, some of the best stuff that we've done. Like, seriously, some of the best stuff that we've done. There's new concepts. There's taking some of the concepts we already have. I'm going deeper with it for you guys. And I'm really trying to give all of you more easy, repeatable, doable processes, like how we change body image, it's how we change the scale. So that, like, when you learn it in one area, it's so much easier to apply it from time to time to time to time. Okay. There are days when I just don't feel like eating. I believe it's only because of some stress going on. Is it okay to just skip them? If you don't feel like eating, don't eat. But I do want you to track when you're not eating. If you do think it's because of stress, what I want you to do is I want you to track that I wasn't eating, and then I want you to go to work on the stress. Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, I don't want you to just be like, well, I'm just not going to eat because I'm stressed. It's like, well, that's fine because you're not hungry, but let's not miss that we're stressed. And that stress is caused from a thought that we are having. Something's happening in the world, and I'm thinking stressful thoughts about it. And the way that I could really improve my health and truly practice self-care and take care of me and love myself is by figuring out what thoughts do I have about things and circumstances in the world that are causing me stress. Because when I'm stressed, I am now not eating. And although I might lose some weight in the long run, what I don't want to do is set myself up to, the only way to lose weight is to stress the fuck out of myself. That's not the result we want. How do you go about planning for the week? I just make a plan. Like, I sit down. So let me just say, if I was going to look at my week, here's how I would do it. When am I eating out? What are my special meals that I'm going to have? I always plan special meals first, eating out first, all that kind of stuff first. Then I usually go through like, all right, what are the easy meals? Like I almost eat the same breakfast every day. Check, put all those in. And then I'm only left with little things. Like, all right, so what am I going to have dinner on this night? What do I think I'm going to want on that night? And so that's if you want to plan the entire week. Some people just plan day by day. But a lot of people, what they do, so that they go to the grocery store, is they know like, all right, so predominantly this week, they just take their 24-hour plan and they just do 7 days worth. And then when they do it in the morning, they finalize it. And then that way they can get a grocery list and everything going. Can you help me get some better thoughts around the time before dinner where I'm actually hungry, but I don't wait to eat? I snack all the way until dinner comes. I'm good for a few days, but then that seems to come again. That's my main off-plan eating issue. Why are you not just planning a snack during that time? A conscious snack. Every single day during this time, this is the snack I have. I don't just leave it up for chance anymore. Like I would just say the next 3 months, I plan a snack during this time. And when I'm hungry, I eat it. And when I'm not, I don't. Like if you're like, you know what, today I'm okay. I can wait. Today, no, I'm really, like, I want to eat a snack. So this is what I get. I don't just sit around and squirrel away food until it's time to eat. That's how I would do it. Under weekly plan, it asks, this week I will work on my hunger scale by doing the following three things. I feel repetitive on this or superficial by saying, listen to my signals. All right, how are you going to listen to your signals? This is a really good question. How can I get the most out of this question? Don't just say, listen to my signals. So what the fuck is that, right? Your brain's like, all right, listen to my signals. By doing what? That's the next question. Like, the three ways I will listen to my hunger signals are, bitch will set a timer on her phone that says, stop eating 5 minutes in, and you take a timeout for three. Listen to your hunger signals. That's strategy one. Strategy two, listen for my hunger signals, is I don't get to eat just because I think I'm hungry. You know what I get to do? Drink me a bottle of water, and 15 minutes later, check in. That's strategy number two for this week. Number three, I eat with my left hand instead of my right hand all week long so that I have to slow my ass down and pay more attention. That's number three. That's how you get out of, like, here's what I am, and we will be doing this at camp. I am an A-line ball buster. Y'all are going to need to learn the skill of how to actually do your, like, you know, think, feel, do, the do line. You got to be doing more on it. A lot of y'all just put some stuff on there and you just like, you know, I'm going to have to stop at my two. I was like, well, bitch, if you could stop at your two, you'd already be doing it. How you going to stop at your two? Give me 10 ways that you can practice this week to stop at your two. And let's just rifle through them until you figure it out. Like when you say, stick to my plan, how you gonna stick to your plan? Sticking to your plan is not a strategy. It's a thought. Sticking to your plan needs 10 ways that you're gonna make sure that that happens. Where are your sticky notes? Like every day, I'm gonna snap it on my phone. It's gonna be my background. I'm gonna send it to my accountability partners. Some bitch is gonna text me 3 times a day to make sure that I'm eating only that. She's gonna send me that picture right back to me. Like, think about those things. Like that, when I say the A line, I mean the actions you're gonna do. Gotta get in it, man. All of you. Would you define what's a binge? It depends on the person. The clinical definition of a binge is someone who eats pretty much like an exorbitant amount of food. Like we're talking lots and lots of food. Sometimes it's blackout eating where they like you like wake up and there's candy wrappers everywhere, that kind of thing. You don't even remember you were eating and it's a lot. It's almost always done in secret where no one else is around. And then when the act is over, it has an incredible amount of shame around it. It's a very shameful experience because of you're thinking you're bad, you're thinking all these things. That's like a technical binge. Some people will say they binge and they'll eat like, you know, a sleeve of Oreos. That's not a binge. That's just overeating. And a lot of times, like, here's the biggest things that I notice the difference between a binge eater and someone who's overeating is a binge eater feels so much shame afterward. Whereas someone who overeats may or may not feel shame. They may feel bad or guilty or whatever. But the emotional recovery isn't as hard. Like they're more apt to do a discovery worksheet, or they're just like, oh, fuck it, and I'll just start tomorrow. Binge eaters rarely ever say, fuck it, I'll start tomorrow. A binge eater has to sit and they have to self-deprecate hard for a while. It's usually full of crying and isolating and things like that. So it's a very, I would say, much more emotionally charged experience after the fact. The actual eating a lot of times involves very secret eating. Most binge eaters would never binge in front of someone, or even if they are binging in front of someone, it's very sneaky. So we had a binge eater once who said, I binge in public, but nobody would know it. And I was like, well, what does that mean? She would be at the office and she would go to one person's desk and she would eat. And then she would go to the kitchen and she would eat. And then she'd go to another person's office and eat. She would find all these places where she was actually eating in public, but no one knew that she had ate like four times right before that. So I want you to think about it like that. And then a lot of times binge eaters, once it starts, they feel as if they just can't stop. Like it feels helpless. And one of the reasons why they feel like they can't stop is because the shame is going to come. And so they're trying to put as much buffer between when they beat themselves up as they possibly can. So the only reason why they can't stop, it's not because they actually can't. It's because until they stop shaming at the end, they have no motivation to stop it. Because I want you to think about it. If I stop eating and I'm just going to immediately get punched straight in the face, I'm probably going to eat as long as I can so that punch in the face is further away. And if I eat way too much, I'm so numb that when the punching starts, at least I don't feel it as much. So I hope that helps you guys. I found out I am pregnant and have decided to maintain my current weight, but I've lost 3 pounds since finding out. I never thought I would be worried about weight loss. What is the difference between eating to lose and eating to maintain if I'm following the hunger scale? Samantha, probably what I would do is still just listen to your hunger cues and everything. Talk to your doctor first. Some doctors, if you have a lot of weight to lose, will say like just eating when you're hungry and stopping when you're satisfied is just fine. I would just talk to your doctor about it. But the other thing you can do is just waiting until you're hungry, and then you might want to eat to like a 3 instead of a 2. But it just depends on how much weight you have to lose and that kind of thing. We have had several girls that, you know, have had like, they've gotten pregnant and they have like 100 pounds to lose, and their doctors have said, you know, if you maintain or you even lose a few pounds, it would be okay just because your body has resources. But I would always talk to them first. But a lot of it is just going to be eating with, like, you still want to wait until you're just barely hungry, and you definitely want to stop at satisfied, if not just a little oversatisfied. And I think that would be fine. We've had lots and lots of people come through here, and their doctors are like, whatever you're doing in there, you should do, because that's kind of what we always tell people when it comes to pregnancy. We don't tell them, hey, eat a lot more. They just want them to eat a tad more and nutritiously. So there you go. I just finished reading The Rules of Normal Eating. Is it an appropriate goal to try to become a normal eater, as she describes it? I eat someone who just eats when hungry and stops when satisfied, makes healthy choices most of the time, is at a normal weight, and does not need to do the plans and paperwork. I think that's a great goal. Where I differ is like the plans. I have always been a planner. I have the paperwork. I love my plans. Like, I think for me, it feels very normal to do them. I don't do them from a place of, I have to do this or I'm going to be back to what I weighed. I don't do it from that. I have seen such value in like deciding ahead of time what I want to eat. Like, here's what I'm going to eat. Here's what's going to be good for me. Here's what I enjoy and stuff. And it takes me 2 minutes. It would be like saying like, well, I really want to be somebody who has a normal relationship with money. I'm just not going to do my checkbook anymore. Once I get like plenty of money, I'm not going to really worry about, you know, doing my checkbook and balancing it. I think it'll all come out in the wash. You know, there are just some things like, now, if you lose your weight and you feel like everything is so on autopilot and all this other stuff, and you're like, I just really don't want to be a planner anymore. I don't enjoy it or whatever. No, do it. just watch and see what happens. But for me, I just have so many things in life that I want to think about. And I just, every time it's time to eat, you know what I don't want to be doing? I don't want to spend 2 to 3 minutes deciding what to eat. It's just not worth it to me. You know what I want to know? I just want to know what I'm going to be eating, and I want to get back to my life. The only time I like deciding what I'm going to eat is, like, if we decide to go out to eat, it's kind of fun to look at things for me, you know, but I don't know. That's where I just differ, but it's all about how you feel. At night, I have a tendency to go past my +2. I notice that this happens, doesn't happen during the day when I have more mental energy. What can I do about this? Serve yourself less. That's one way. You can always just eat, like, just put less on the plate and you don't go back. Figure out what it is during this day that you tell yourself, and what are the patterns around that makes stopping at a +2 easier, and then try to replicate that at night also. What are some clues that will help me delineate whether I'm actually tired and need to rest, or if I'm using that as an excuse? I'm a recovering shoulder with some Catholic guilt on top of it. I should be exercising right now, but insert tired, dread, overwhelm. Dread and overwhelmed are what I would call the indulgent thoughts. Like, if you're overwhelmed and not exercising, that's because you're thinking there's too much to do and stuff like that. You need to ask yourself, really? Can I not exercise right now? Like, is it true that I have too much to do to where I'm not going to choose to exercise? Like, question all of it. A lot of times with tired, here's how I do it. When I have something on the plan and I am really physically tired, I do, can I just go walk for 5 minutes? So I go walk for 5 minutes, and I either will naturally want to keep going, or I will actually be too tired and turn around and come home. And when on those days, when I just try to do what I said I would do and I'm like, oh, it's a no, that's when I'm just like, you know what? That's obviously the right choice. Maybe 1 out of every 10 times I'm using it as an excuse, but I always go by the rule of, if I just get started and I still don't feel like doing it, I give myself grace and compassion that there is a reason in this body to stop, and that's going to be okay every single time. And I'm just going to have my back on that decision, and I don't need to beat myself up over it. So that's how I would do it. Do I need to lose the fear of weight gain to really be confident and have peace around treat food? Yeah. You can't have confidence when fear is staring you in the face. I'm asking because in intuitive eating, as I have understood it, your advice to lose the fear of gaining weight for treat foods, become less forbidden fruits and lose their naughty appeal. They do. Like, basically, in my mindset, it's like, plan treat foods and teach yourself how to normalize them by listening to what you think about when you have them, rather than I'm just not going to have them and hope that my relationship with them changes. I don't know if I can lose my discomfort with the idea of putting on a lot of weight. You're probably not. Here's what I want you to, I don't want you to like think I'm going to plan these foods and then all of a sudden my brain's going to clean itself up and not worry about weight loss. That's not the goal. The goal is to plan the foods and say, like, and my brain is going to be afraid I'm going to gain weight. That's part of me overcoming this. It's the part where I have to allow that thought to come in and, like, you know, it's not true. It's a lie that my brain says. I've just acted upon it so often, it feels very true. So it means, the price to pay to have these foods in your life is to go through the fear first. And the fear is only generated by, and it's because I think I will gain weight. And then you can tell yourself, but here's what I do know. The recipe to weight gain is by eating these foods without planning them. Eating them when I emotionally want them. Eating them because I've taken them away from myself so long that I don't even know how to have them on a normal day. That's probably really the recipe to weight gain. And my brain has been wrong about this for a long time. So it's going to be very natural that while I'm unwinding the story, I will be afraid because my brain will keep thinking, hey, Laura, this is wrong. Hey, Laura, you're likely to gain weight. Hey, Laura, what the fuck are you even doing? Because the only way I know we've ever ate this food is like an asshole. But you've never trained yourself how to, like, have the relationship with it, have it when it's planned, have it while it's thinking shitty thoughts, and at the same time, telling yourself, like, and this is part of learning the new relationship. That's all it is. And one day this part will be over. It's just not over today. I'm on my period, and I have newfound high blood pressure. Both are things that have symptoms that mask my hunger signals. What should I do since I'm a June baby still figuring out my hunger scale to begin with? So I don't know about blood pressure masking hunger signals. I've actually never heard that. If any of you have comments who can speak to that, that would be awesome. As far as the period, just have a period protocol. Here's what I eat and when I eat on my period. And it only happens a few days a month. So if the other 27 days of the month I'm doing my hunger scale, great. Well, these 3 days of the month, I just plan like a boss. Here's the foods I want to eat, and here's when I'm going to eat them. Because my hunger scale is affected by my hormones during this time. And then you would just do the same thing with the blood pressure. I'm transitioning away from a very short spell of calorie counting. Today's my first day of planning without counting. I'm worried I'm going to plan myself masses of food. What's so funny is I'm worried I'm going to plan masses of food, and it's like, well, then don't do that. That's your job. It's not like masses of food is just going to hop on the plan without you. And then just use the fact it's on my plan as an excuse to eat it all. This is what I would say, like, rather than I'm worried this is going to happen, say, one thing my brain might try to do is say, like, I've planned this food, and when it's time to have it, I might say, well, it's on the plan, so let's eat. But what I will be learning is that what's on the plan only gets eaten if I'm actually hungry. Being on the plan is not a green light to eat it. The green light comes, it's like, it's on the plan, it's like you see the traffic signal in the distance, you gotta decide, is it red or green? It's red if you're not hungry. It's like, stop, we aren't eating because we ain't hungry. It's green if I am. I don't have a lot of weight to lose. Will this approach work for fine tuning as well as large amounts of weight loss? It works for everyone. I've had people come up in here and all they had was 5 pounds to lose, and then they lose their 5 pounds. I have had people who were maintaining with counting calories, who have learned to maintain without counting calories. Let me just remind you, I don't have your name. You were born with a stomach. You were born with a brain. They were always intended to talk to each other, to figure out how your ass was going to be on this earth for as long as it takes. Somewhere along the lines, you learned to eat too much. And then somewhere along the line, somebody said, you know what? Your brain and your stomach aren't to be trusted. This app is your magic pill. It's a no. Your brain and your stomach are going to help you. All you have to do is listen, be like, oh, my brain wants to tell me I can eat the foods that are on the plan, because probably for years and years and years I've restricted with calorie counting. That's okay. All I gotta remember is it's a green light if I'm hungry, it's a red light if I'm not. We ain't blowing through traffic signals just because, like, be like saying, well, you know, my best friend's riding shotgun over here in the car, and she said just blow the red light. So I did. She ain't got a better plan. She gonna get you arrested. I've realized due to past trauma that my mind decided to keep me fat as a protection. Have you dealt with women with this issue about a bajillion times, Anna? And are there any courses or info on the website to help us reverse this fat protection idea? The model. It's literally the model. So you really want to just go through phase two and run your thoughts of how, like, is it actually protecting you? what I usually tell people is, at one point in your life, you suffered some trauma, and your brain made a connection that if you do that, like it made an illogical connection. Hey, having weight on you is the formula for staying safe. As if overweight people are never traumatized, taken advantage of, raped, murdered, killed, or whatever, right? Like, I want you to see that that's what the important distinction is. And it's not to scare you, it's to say like, oh, my brain made an illogical jump. And now, at this stage in my life, I don't need weight as a protective layer. I now have my mind. I now have choices. I now have this set of skills that's actually what protects me. And what's happening is when it comes to weight now, I'm re-traumatizing myself in the present day. That's what's actually happening now. That's the short of it. I've done some coaching calls on this. I don't know where they're at, but that's like the short explanation. One of the things that you can do is you can use our rewriting the past letter. We have like a, if you go to the resources where the bonuses are, there's a rewriting your past where you're going to kind of just take a look at the past and how you tell the story. And you kind of have done that. It's like when I look at the past and I retell the story, I see where I used weight as a way to shield myself from thoughts, feelings, remembrances, experiences, future trauma, all this other kind of stuff. Now what you do is you just have to decide. You have to like, I understand my brain has made an illogical connection there. And now what I need to do is retrain myself in the present day that if I was to lose weight, that's not setting me up for danger. And then here are all the reasons how I know that's true. And then you start listing out all those reasons why that could be true. Why taking care of yourself with food, losing weight, etc., how that actually allows you to do the self-care, self-preservation, the protection, all of the things that you actually wanted then. Now I just am going to give it to myself. There are, I don't have this in here, but there is a lot of good work on, especially if past trauma happened when you were younger, inner child work, where you basically are going to take you today as the adult who has examined all of this and who's working and processing the emotion, all of it, and like kind of taking it apart from the adult lens versus what most of us do is we remember our traumatic pasts from our childlike lens. And so now you want to give yourself the opportunity to see it from your adult lens. And then what you do is you spend some time writing and thinking about your inner child, who that's your unconscious part of your brain who comes up and says things like, you know, we should eat, we should do these things. Like, and you tell your inner child, I have us now. That used to work. It's not working in present day. And now I'm going to take care of us. I'm going to be the adult that should have taken, who should have took care of us. Or I'm going to be the adult now who didn't have the ability to take care of us back then. Whatever, however you want to phrase it. So there's a lot of powerful work there. I have done some inner child work on just feeling bullied and abandoned by my dad, feeling bullied by children when I was growing up, different things like that, where in my adult life, I re-victimized myself by believing that I wasn't good enough. Like I blamed myself for a long time. Like I would seek out ways now how I wasn't doing enough, how I needed to do more. I needed more accomplishment. I needed to do like basically burning myself out, wearing myself out, exhausting the relationships in my life because I was always trying to like do more to prove like, see, I need all of you to see that I am good enough because no one believed it back then. And so anyway, I did a lot of work with going back and talking to my inner child about how we don't have to exhaust ourselves to get the attention of people that just weren't good at loving us. And that's what I always tell myself when it comes to my dad is, you know, my dad just, he's not a bad person. He's just not he's not good at loving, especially loving the way I would like, you know? And so, and that's okay. I just wish it was this way, and I have a lot of compassion for myself in that. So there you go. How do you retrain your brain when the unintentional model feels more comfortable than the intentional model? you use the unintentional model thought as a trigger for the new thought over and over and over again. So you just, every single time it comes up, you use it as the trigger thought to be like, oh, and we're replacing it with this one until you figure it out. The other thing you can do is if the old one feels more comfortable, when it comes up, you remind yourself, like, even though this is the easy thought to think, here's the unintended consequences of it. So each time you make up or you tell yourself the story of, and the unintended consequences of this, what I would consider a comfortable thought are, and what it does is it starts letting your brain associate pain to that thought versus ease in that thought. Your brain wants comfort and ease and pleasure. And right now it's taking comfort and ease in that thought, even if it has terrible results at the end of the day. Your brain's like, I don't give a shit about your results. All I care about is in the moment. And so you have to start teaching the brain, like, ooh, it's like, you know, we're going to think about it. We're going to redirect our brain. And, oh my God, these are the unintended consequences and blah, blah, blah. Like, then your brain's like, well, that thought, like, really doesn't make sense. Ooh, I can see why that, like, when you give yourself the unintended consequences, you get a little emotional hit of pain that makes you want to transition to one that's going to give you a hit of pleasure. I'm a May baby. I'm having a lot of depression and anxiety around COVID. I was told you did a course or video on how to deal with COVID, but I can't find it. My mind keeps taking every body ache and immediately go to, I have COVID, so why bother dieting? How do I get out of this? Well, first of all, Mary Jo, I think our COVID resources, they're no longer on the site, but we still can access them, so we could still give people, like, we can still give her the link to it. The best thing for you to do, though, is to, I want you to think, number one, COVID doesn't cause me stress or anxiety or depression. My thoughts about COVID do. So I want you to make a list. The things I think, the things I feel, the things I do. I want you to put depression and anxiety in your feel, and I want you to come up with as many thoughts that trigger depression, that trigger anxiety around COVID. And I want your brain to see, it's my thinking that's causing the anxiety and that's causing the depression. And then your action or your do line in your journal is, think I have COVID, spiral in fear, give up, come up with excuses. I want you to see that you're doing it and COVID really isn't. Hypersensitive to every ache and need. So let me ask you this. Let's say, so what is the point in dieting? Like, if your brain's going to go, why bother? I'll tell you why. Because if you did get COVID, wouldn't it be easier to get over it if you were already eating healthy and you had built up your immune system and stuff? Like, go to work on that question. A lot of you will allow yourself to ask a pointless question like, why bother? Not answer it on purpose, and then let your habit brain sit around and come up with bullshit answers. Like, yeah, why bother? Let's eat Oreos. It's like, I'll tell you why bother. Because if I get COVID, I'd like to have my immune system built. Here's why bother. I may not get it at all. And if I don't get it, I will have wasted my time. Here's another reason to bother. Unless you're just out circulating in the public or whatever. The likelihood, like, I'll tell you why I bother, because when I'm really focused on not getting COVID and taking really good care of myself, I raise the chances of washing my hands and doing the things and blah, blah, blah. Like, that's why you want to answer the question. A lot of us allow our brains to, like, throw out these bullshit thoughts and don't even bother answering them. Guys, anytime your brain, like, it's like, why am I so fat? You need to be aware of that, because if you don't answer, your brain will, your default brain, and it will never have a good one. It will be very full of shame. If you ask the question, why am I so fat? Like, because I used to do this all the time. I would just sit around like, why am I so fat? And then I would just sit there and eat chips and be like, because life's too hard. Like, I would just come up with reasons. So what I would do is be like, here, whenever I ask a pointless question, I want to ask myself, rather than why am I so fat, ask myself, how can I take better care of myself today? Use those pointless questions as a trigger for a question that steers your brain in the direction of usefulness. All right, there was one more that just came in, and then we're going to get out of here. Ooh, it's a long one. I've been struggling with plus two since I first heard the concept. Then I had a misunderstanding on the hunger scale chart. The last week I have been eating my food and thinking as long as I didn't feel uncomfortable, I didn't go past two. I don't think that was right. I still lost a pound though. I'm frustrated. I love how late. Here I am taking a guess at the hunger scale, losing weight. I'm fucking frustrated. I feel like I'm never going to find the sweet spot. I think if you're losing a pound and you're eating to what you feel like is comfortable, sounds like you found the sweet spot. I would be more curious why. I don't know why I'm so mad at myself over this. Here's why you're so mad at yourself over this. Because you're doubting. You're determined. Like, I would almost bet you. What is your name? Let me find you. I would almost bet, Mandy, you have a belief that weight loss is hard. So here's what I would do. If I was you, I would be like, what do I believe about weight loss? Is it hard? Is it impossible? Is it going to take a long time? Is it difficult? Is it frustrating? Is it confusing? Like, whatever your thoughts are about weight loss, that's probably why you're mad at yourself. A lot of times we get mad at ourselves because we're trying to prove a belief system. Like, it's hard. So it's like, I lost a pound this week. I'm paying attention to my plus two, doing things, and the best that I can tell myself is this is fucking frustrating. Like, I want you to be like, oh, I'm just wrong about that. I'm losing weight. I'm paying attention. Those are things that I'm doing. I could also be proud of myself. And I may uncover new things that I didn't know. I'll just pay attention to them. If you're like, rather than being upset with yourself and saying, I read something different, all right, then why not just like, you know what, this week, I'll change it up a little bit. And I'll either like it or I won't. And if I don't, the worst that's going to happen is I'll go back to what I was doing and keep losing a pound a week. Just think about the conversation you're having with yourself. Somebody said, why bother? Because COVID will probably be around forever. We can be strong women that take care of our own health care in our own hands. That's a good answer. On the topic of depression, what are the best resources in NoBS for dealing with clinical depression? I don't have resources for clinical depression. I highly recommend you see doctors for clinical depression. I know about clinical depression. One of the best things to do for clinical depression is to go to your doctor. You may need meds and supplement that with the thought work. For me, that's been magic to like think about like, okay, I always used to tell people like I had never had a problem with taking any meds for depression. I'm currently not on them, but I really think it's because of the years where I did take medicine and I opened myself up to coaching and therapy. Meds wiggled me out of the rut of where my hormones were so like so depressive. That once I kind of leveled up there, I was able to work through all the things that were like triggering the depression to begin with. Because one of the things I know, like some of us say depression, and what we really just mean is we're just sad and down. And then some of us actually have clinical depression where we really need some medicine. Like I'm gonna need me a little drug. Because at this point, let me just tell you how feelings work. This is actually going into camp stuff, but let me just tell you guys kind of how feelings work. Number one, you have a thought, right? Sentence goes through that brain. Brain is like, boom, here's your thought based upon what I just saw in the world. That thought will always generate a feeling. And every feeling has a chemical cocktail that comes along on the sidecar. So when your brain sends up a sentence, it generates an emotion that has a mix of chemicals that goes along with it, like cortisol, adrenaline, dopamine, serotonin, whatever, right? That chemical cocktail goes through your body, and that's the physical expression of the emotion that you're feeling. So some of us get red-faced, we cry, our heart starts beating, we get tightness in our chest, we can't breathe, whatever. Like when I get anxious,
I literally feel like I can't take a deep breath. Like I'm trying all day and I'm always short of breath. So your body habituates very often. So like if you stay stressed, then your brain is going to want, it'll habituate to the stress hormones. And it will be like, hey, send up another stressful thought. Hey, send up another stressful thought. Hey, look at our boss. What a dick. He's trying to control our life. You know, like it will do those things. Your job is to start noticing your thinking more and more and more. And the more you get really good at seeing your thinking, then when your brain is trying to overthink certain things that make you feel like ass, you start deliberately and consciously changing it over so that you're removing some of those chemical cocktails. You're deconditioning the feeling of stress with this. Like you're starting to break all of it apart. And it's kind of like, I want you to think about when we're doing it, like when you're organizing a closet, you're going to take everything out. And then what we want to do is we want to decide what we want to keep and what we don't want to keep. And then we're going to put it in orders and in ways that make sense, that make it easier to find what we want to find and all that kind of stuff. So I just think when it comes to clinical depression and stuff is that it's like, number one, when it comes to meds, a lot of you probably need to do thought work around meds. Like meds is now the circumstance of your life. And you need to figure out what thoughts you want to have about it. For me, thoughts around medicine have always been, this is what's going to help me figure out my shit. And I've also always been a big fan that if you're going to be on meds, you either need therapy or at least coaching. Because when you get to the point of depression, it's because there's been some thoughts that have been a lot, like it could be conditioning as a child. It could be lots of thoughts and beliefs handed to you that you have had on repeat all your life that you didn't even know were optional that cause you to have depression and stuff. So I just always think that there's a real beautiful marriage between the two. And, you know, sometimes people just need to be told by someone like me or someone in the group that it's not a big deal. But combine it with the thought work. So once you get like some meds and you talk to a doctor and stuff, step two is you still have to examine your thinking. I don't think anyone should not be examining their thinking. But if you need to be on meds for depression and stuff, you for sure need to be examining your thinking. I know this, that is my opinion. As someone who has dealt with it since, you know, I mean, I think the first meds I took were when I was 15 or 16. I was on Prozac then. Like, I have been off and on most of my life. In fact, even here recently, like the last few months have been, I was telling my coach, I was crying and I just said, you know, I feel like I'm a great coach and I'm a master coach and I know things, but managing my mind is now becoming a full-time job. Like, I feel like I'm having to, it's like, you know, the thoughts are coming in faster and faster. And I know myself well enough to know when that's happening. And I think that that's really important to have that self-awareness, which I think phase two of No BS helps all of us with. It helps us learn that self-awareness. To me, the best gift I've ever given myself since I started, you know, having like depression and stuff has been self-awareness. It's allowed me to stay real in touch with my mind and my emotions. Whereas when I was depressed and suicidal, it was because I was not in touch with my emotions and my thoughts. I just thought everything was happening to me. I felt very out of control. I didn't question anything. I didn't have compassion for myself. I felt very victim-y. And I felt very hopeless. I just allowed myself to feel hopeless all the time without really thinking about, do I want to feel hopeless? Or do I want to be aware of what I like can control today? Like, and it was a lot of baby steps for me. And to this day, sometimes it still is. It's a lot of waking up and feeling like I can think everything's coming in. It's all too much. I'm not good enough. This is never going to get better. Like, I have like all kinds of like, y'all, talk about like shit hits the fan and just sprays the room when I wake up sometimes. And I, a lot of times, can just tell myself, and that's just what we're thinking today. And it's probably going to come in a lot. So I make a list on those days of what's in my control. It's usually a tiny list, but that small little list allows me to have like, it's like that one place where I can breathe. Like I can, like, and I won't even say take the deep breath, but I can breathe. Because sometimes I wake up and I just seem to feel like I can't breathe, you know? So hopefully that's helpful. But self-awareness is a gift. It is a real gift. And when you learn how to do self-awareness and when you learn how to listen to what you think about and not judge yourself and think you should be thinking differently or that you should be better, when you really can separate that part out, you give yourself the gift of compassion and understanding and love. And that's what we ultimately want. Like, I don't need to be happy all the time and I don't need everything to be right. I just don't need it to be a shit show in my head. I can deal with being sad and I can deal with being disappointed and I can deal with that stuff when it's not the only things I'm feeling, when I'm allowing myself awareness, space, like a little bit of peace, a moment of calm, like then I feel like, all right, you are in control when you can do that. All right. You guys have a great Saturday. Happy 4th, everyone. This was a long one. Sorry about that. We talked about a lot of things today, though. I will see everybody for coaching tomorrow. We'll be on at noon Central Time over on Zoom. So if you want to get coached, yeah, just come on over there. All right. Bye, y'all.